Oh, good evening.
We not only have six Sangha members, but there's six dogs too.
What do you mean? Oh, is she her Stella? Dog still?
Yes.
Still sick? Oh, that's very sad. She's a young dog.
I don't know Stella, Samia's dog.
I know, but do you know Samia?
She ate something, I think. Yeah, it's a real emergency. Send our loving kindness in that direction. Oh, it's too bad. Well, we're nearly finished with this book, having read first Dogen and then Uchiyamarushi about Dogen. So even though it's a skinny book, it seems very long. It just covers all the ground for us. And this is a very nice chapter on the function of a settled life. It's what everybody in the Bay Area is longing for, and everybody talks about it. Oh, if we could only have a more settled life. And where is it? How can it be? The highways are more crowded and people more anxious, and nobody knows what's going to happen next, and it's extremely hard to live a settled life. That's why we're so fortunate to have been discovered by this practice and to be able to continue to return over and over to this place of refuge. He says, freedom from anxiety can only be found at that point where the self settles naturally upon itself. And he says, I'm sure you will understand why the self settles naturally upon itself, which is shikantaza, which is only just sitting. It's the most fundamental teaching of Buddhism. Koban always said, you just have to sit down sometimes for a little while. Just don't keep at it all the time. And he goes on to talk about setting goals, setting some kind of intention, but more than an intention, a real dedicated idea about where this is supposed to be going, even though we don't really know. And are most often surprised by what does happen in the course of whatever goals we think we have had. Often turns into something very different. A complicated life takes a happening like that, like a different twist on one's own personal goals, as a kind of sense of a mistake is being made, something has to be done about this, and tries to tweak it back into some kind of way that the goal is more real. But actually, the more we're able to relax into what happens and really study what we've been given, the more our life opens up in tremendous richness. It's really quite marvelous, the synergy that is always available for us when we accept what's happening rather than resisting it. He says, we suffer in direct proportion to our fixation on attaining the goal. He says, that way of life has no true stability. Stability is another way of talking about a settled life. Just not to be thrown by things. And then he does this funny thing about men's underwear, old-fashioned men's underwear, that I don't really understand very well, so I'm going to skip it. He says, when doing zazen, we practice ceasing to project some goal separate from the self. Instead, we learn to live out completely the self that settles upon itself. That's why Dogen writes that zazen is the standard or model of true peace and tranquility. And there's a note. Oh, it's a quote from Bendoa. All the Buddhas and Tathagatas have an incomparable means for transmitting a mysterious and subtle dharma, which he calls life attitude, and for awakening and clarifying one's life. The standard for this transmission, which takes place without error only between Buddhas, is carried on by means of a samadhi which functions freely within oneself. That means is the practice of zazen, which is the main entrance into this samadhi, enabling one's life to function freely within itself. And that's probably a very important point, that somehow we think we're going to get it from outside and put it in us. And actually, it's the other way around. It's the in us that we're practicing. Always, really. But most of the time, we're finding things and bringing them in and then working them. But at the same time, we're being worked. And the more we're aware of the life of us, this life, the more clarity we find and the more stability. He says, when I use the term self, I'm not referring to some fixed entity. The self is life, and life is functioning. And functioning means activity which works toward the world in which this self lives. And I don't mean withdrawing and escaping from society. On the contrary, this expression means that your life manifests itself as life. This is it. Strange as it feels sometimes. There were, back in the 60s, there was a book of things you said to yourself to make you feel better about yourself. And one of the practices was looking in the mirror. And I knew someone who did this a lot. You'd look in the mirror and say, oh, I like you. Or I like the way you look, and try to cultivate some way of, but it was outside. It was always a projection rather than just liking this. this is very different from what we think we see out there. So then this takes us to, of course, those minds, those three minds that Dogen talked about. That is my favorite part of the Tenzo Kyokan, the parental mind and the joyous mind and the great mind, the magnanimous mind. He said we find the true meaning of our lives through these attitudes. So he says merely to study Buddhist thought and philosophy through books or do zazen only to become entranced by satori as some rapturous and esoteric state of mind without actually putting our bodies to work in our day-to-day lives leaves grave doubts as to whether we have any idea at all of what it means to truly live out the Dharma. I was in a little bit of a hurry this morning going down Winchester, and somebody wanted to come into the line that I was in my car, in his car, coming out of a shopping center. And I stopped and let him in, and which I often do, but without really considering what it was. But I got this little jolt of joy. And I remembered reading that when you give something, even the smallest thing, it releases oxytocin in your body. That pleasure just floods your body in the process of giving something, even allowing somebody to go in front of you. It's what he's talking about in here. That's what joyous mind. It's not something that we have to grit our teeth and try really, really hard to accomplish in some way. It's not like that. It's more like relaxing and just letting it be like this and giving it away. There's lots more where it came from. He says if you had been born in the heavenly realm, you would not be able to enjoy this Bodhi spirit. You wouldn't feel the necessity to practice Zazen. Who knows? I don't know about that. I don't know what brings us to sit. It always seems strange that not everybody is doing this practice. It has so many benefits in so many different ways, and yet I don't know why we're doing this either. I was driving down here on Tuesday night, and it's pretty mysterious. He says, those who live in this community of Sangha, he's quoting the Chanyang Kingi, the Sangha is the most precious of all things. Those who live in this community are unfettered by the pettiness of social affairs. Such a community manifests a refined posture devoid of fabrication about the world. Refined posture devoid of fabrication about the world. Being born human. So without fabrication, not too much forethought. just enough, but not too much. Many encourages and encourages to get this tendo job and do it right and do it well, and do it with vigor and joyous contemplation and concentration and etc. And it makes me smile because I have heard two times now from the Eno at Chikoji who's planning the Sesshin, and she can't find a tenzo. So we're looking for somebody with this kind of mind who can cook for us. So far, we can't find anybody. He talks about his own experience, Uchiyama Roshi does, about being tenzo and how he did it for 16 years. Unbelievable. And he said he didn't only have to cook all the meals, but he had to chop the wood and grow the vegetables as well. They just lived right on the edge, constantly at Antaiji. And how he had no trouble doing it once he got into it. He even made a continuous supply of pickles, he said, which are very important in a monastery. You always have to have pickles. Spending our lives chasing after money, fame, or the growth and success of our children, goals that disappear quickly like foam on water or the wind-blown flame of a candle. That's a meaningless life. What should we be doing with our lives? Sawaki Roshi always said that we need to learn what it means to emerge from a life which is confused, incomplete, and carelessly haphazard, a life based on compromise, on always fooling ourselves and others about who we are, about how we live. We need to learn what it means to settle naturally into our lives. And I was thinking about it this afternoon, and I had company and was cleaning off my desk to make sure it looked really, really nice. My desk never looks like that. Just putting on airs. A very funny feeling. But it felt from my St. Louis 1950s, 40s background like a really important thing to do. Well trained. And he says, we spend too much of our time living only by force of habit, or by throwing our energies in some fanatical direction completely opposite from living in as fundamental a way as possible. Now, more than in any age before, though we cannot spend all our time pondering every little thing, we do need to take time out to reflect seriously on the significance of settling our lives. And this, I underlined in the book because I think it's a place that all of us need to study. It's so easy to become habitual and take things for granted, including our good training from our good parents from long ago. We're still carrying a lot of that conditioning. And to pay close attention to what it is that tells us what to do, what leads us in the direction that we find ourselves going. And really ask, now, is this my way? or is this a way that I've been trained like a nice little pony, very well behaved, but maybe this isn't the way that's in me, the within part that is always wanting to live, is always coming and going in us. So much of our practice, I think, as we get up off the cushion, is about paying very close attention to what this is, and it's a hard work. He says here it's hard work, that it's not something that we sit and we get all calm down and happy. It's more like we become more vital and more authentic just because we don't think about ourselves so much. We've become more interested in what it is in us that wants to live and what this living is. Functioning as a tenzo is just hard and at times painful work. There's no time to get enraptured in religious ecstasy, he says. Yet throwing all your passion for life into that work, that's what it means to have a joyful mind. And that reminds me of Jikoji again, because that's how it was with us when we were creating Jikoji. That it was such an enormous project, and it was considered impossible. So there were a few of us who thought we would do it anyway. And it was very hard work. It was unbelievably hard work, and there was so much joy in it. They were just climbing up those hills, sliding through the leaves and the damp, and picking up beer cans and filling up bag after bag after bag of dreck and dragging it out of there and cleaning up the forest. That was one of the most difficult jobs I think I ever did, and one of the most joyous at the same time. I think that's what he means. It was not about us, and it wasn't even a goal exactly. It was just that there was this immense vitality that was intending, meaning for us to be there and be doing that. Can't even look back and explain it, because there is no explanation, except it was a passionate, impersonal kind of effort. We got nothing out of it but splinters and mud and hardship. It was very, very fun. So there's time for discussion, questions.
Yeah, I just remember doing something somewhat similar as a Boy Scout in Oregon when I was about 12. Mm-hmm. We went up into the woods and planted trees.
Ooh.
Those trees are still there.
I bet they are. Oh. Have you been to visit them?
I don't even remember where we went. I know it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Take two steps, plant a tree.
Yeah.
Take two steps. Did that for, 4 or 5 days.
Whoa.
We covered, there's 100 of us, we covered a couple whole hillsides in little trees.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea where they are. It was great.
And it had probably been timbered.
Oh, that's probably why.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bare.
Replacing them.
You were a ho-dad.
Is that so?
That's what they call them, tree planters.
Oh.
Ho-dads.
Hmm. Okay.
Put the hoe in.
I guess.
Huh.
Yeah, they sell contracts. Did you guys get any money?
Oh, no.
The government contracts out tree planting.
Hmm.
Not to Boy Scouts.
Well, this troop might have gotten some money. That was like 60 years ago.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, wouldn't he need to go back? I have no idea.
Get lost in that forest.
Yeah. Couldn't do it now.
No.
No. I bent over and stay there. I think it'd get up in a crane.
I know what you mean, Paul. Yeah. There are other ways of doing now.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Just as passionate and vital and interesting, mm-hmm. but different. Well, we've decided what we're doing next. I think we decided to do the Heart Sutra, did we? Does anybody remember?
Must have been when I was out. I don't remember.
No, we haven't. She's going way back to before took up the cook. Yeah, we'll have to do some research on that.
I was just given a book, a new book about the Heart Sutra that's really good. It's written by Ken MacLeod, or MacLeod, I don't know how to pronounce his name, who trained mostly in Tibetan Buddhism as well as Zen. And it's a very unusual book. It seems extremely relaxed, and yet it's very contemporary. He has a lot of quotations in there. He quotes T.S. Eliot and all kinds of people you wouldn't imagine. And his explanation is really, really good. I thought I would bring it in next week and let you all. It has an illustration on every page of a target and various things that happen to the target. Sometimes an arrow goes in it, and sometimes, oh, it's very mixed up and supposedly reflecting whatever the words are that are on the page also. I can't quite make it out, and I think that's part of it, that it's kind of keeps you awake. So I'll bring it and share it.
I remember doing the Heart Sutra here. Somebody named Red something. Red Fern.
Red Pine.
Red Pine.
That's a very good book.
Well, we did it just before Bendover.
Yes.
I have a book by the Dalai Lama on the Heart Sutra.
I do too. That's a beautiful book. Very, very helpful. Yeah, we did do the Heart Sutra rather not so long ago, didn't we?
So I kind of thought.
Yeah.
I thought it would be nice to get a new take from a different book. You know,
yeah.
Variety.
There are a lot of other things out there, though, so. Think about it. Think about what you'd like to consider. It's all words, but Some of them are very important words. Very good to know.
While we're on that very subject, one area, I'm not suggesting you go an area, and there are a number of books that address it, but death, or how to die.
That's a very good one.
I see that Lama Zopa has a new one out.
Uh-huh.
And its title is escaping me right now, but that's kind of a discussion I'd like to have. And if we can't do it as a Sangha, that might be one of those things that I'd like to resurrect our old book club.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Anybody who would find that interesting. There's a number of really good books out on it now.
Including The Year to Die. A Year to Live, I guess it's called. Right?
So.
Yeah. Oh, very good suggestion. With Lama Zopa, you get into the whole rebirth business, though, won't you? That gets a little tricky in Soto Zen.
Well, I think he's getting—you know—he's in his late 70s, I imagine by now, and he probably finds it a good subject for his students as he's.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you met him?
You know, I did years and years ago at Vajrapani.
Vajrapani.
Yeah.
You may have met him around the same time I did. 80s?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Judy?
Is Thich Nhat Hanh ill? Did you read that?
Which one?
Is Thich Nhat Hanh
ill?
He had a stroke. He's ill.
Right.
Here in San Francisco area.
He's not here anymore. They took him back
to
Plum Village.
Okay.
And he's trying really hard to walk. He can't speak yet, except one word. I think he said one word. It's probably thank you or something like that, knowing him. But the report is that he can walk with help. And he's really happy to be back. So, yeah, thank you for remembering him. He went through a lot with that stroke. Yeah. He has a lot to say about dying, too. Many good words. Let's think about that. Okay, time for a sit.